Book 17. Stranger at the Gates. When young Dawn with her rose-red fingers shone once more, Telemachus strapped his rawhide sandals to his feet, and the young prince, the son of King Odysseus, picked up the rugged spear that fit his grip, and striking out for the city, told his swineherd, "I'm off to town, old friend, to present myself to mother. She'll never stop her bitter tears and mourning, well I know, till she sees me face to face. And for you, I have some orders. Take this luckless stranger to town so he can beg his supper there. And whoever wants can give the man some crumbs and a cup to drink. How can I put up with every passer-by? My mind's weighed down with troubles. If the stranger resents it, all the worse for him. I like to tell the truth and tell it straight." "My friend," subtle Odysseus broke in, "I've no desire myself to linger here. Better that beggars catch their meals in town than in the fields. Some willing soul will see to my needs. I'm hardly fit at my age to keep to a farm and jump to a foreman's every order. Go on, then. This man will take me, as you've told him. Once I'm warm from the fire, and the sun's good and strong. Look at the clothing on my back, all rags and tatters. I'm afraid the frost at dawn could do me in, and town, you say, is a long, hard way from here." At that, Telemachus strode down through the farm in quick, firm strides, brooding death for the suitors. And once he reached his well-constructed palace, propping his spear against a sturdy pillar and crossing the stone threshold, in he went. His old nurse was the first to see him, Eurycleia, just spreading fleeces over the carved inlaid chairs. Tears sprang to her eyes. She rushed straight to the prince as the other maids of great Odysseus flocked around him, hugged him warmly, kissed his head and shoulders. Now down from her chamber came discreet Penelope, looking for all the world like Artemis or golden Aphrodite, bursting into tears as she flung her arms around her darling son and kissed his face and kissed his shining eyes and sobbed, "You're home, Telemachus." Words flew from her heart. "Sweet light of my eyes, I never thought I'd see you again. Once you shipped to Pylos against my will, so secret out for news of your dear father. Quick, tell me, did you catch sight of the man? Meet him?
What?"
"Please, mother," steadied Telemachus replied, "don't move me to tears. Don't stir the heart inside me. I've just escaped from death. Sudden death.
No.
Bathe now. Put on some fresh clothes. Go up to your own room with your serving women. Pray and promise the gods a generous sacrifice to bring success, if Zeus will ever grant us the hour of our revenge. I myself am off to the meeting grounds to summon up a guest who came with me from abroad when I sailed home. I sent him on ahead with my trusted crew. I told Piraeus to take him to his house, treat him well, host him with all goodwill, till I could come myself." Words to the mark that left his mother silent. She bathed now, put on some fresh clothes, prayed, and promised the gods a generous sacrifice to bring success, if Zeus would ever grant the hour of their revenge. Spear in hand, Telemachus strode on through the hall and out, and a pair of sleek hounds went trotting at his heels. And Athena lavished a marvellous splendour on the prince, so the people all gazed in wonder as he came forward. The swaggering suitors clustered, milling round him, welcome words on their lips and murder in their hearts. But he gave them a wide berth as they came crowding in, and there where Mentor sat, Antiphus, Halitherses too, his father's loyal friends from the early days, he took his seat, as they pressed him with their questions. And just then Piraeus, the gallant spearman, approached, leading the stranger through the town and out onto the meeting grounds. Telemachus, not hanging back, went right up to greet Theoclymenus, his guest. But Piraeus spoke out first, "Quickly now, Telemachus, send some women to my house to retrieve the gifts that Menelaus gave you." "Wait, Piraeus," wary Telemachus cautioned. "We've no idea how all of this will go. If the brazen suitors cut me down in the palace, off guard, and carve apart my father's whole estate, I'd rather you yourself or one of his friends here keep those gifts and get some pleasure from them. But if I can bring down slaughter on that crew, you send the gifts to my house. We'll share the joy. Their plans made, he led the wayworn stranger home, and once they reached the well-constructed palace, spreading out their cloaks on a chair or bench, into the burnished tubs they climbed and bathed. When women had washed them, rubbed them down with oil, and drawn warm fleece and shirts around their shoulders, out of the baths they stepped and sat on high-backed chairs. A maid brought water soon, in a graceful golden pitcher, and over a silver basin tipped it out so they might rinse their hands, then pulled a gleaming table to their side. A staid housekeeper brought on bread to serve them, appetizers aplenty too, lavish with her bounty. Penelope sat across from her son beside a pillar, leaning back on a low chair and winding fine-spun yarn. They reached out for the good things that lay at hand, and when they'd put aside desire for food and drink, the queen, for all her composure, said at last, "Telemachus, I'm going back to my room upstairs and lie down on my bed. That bed of pain my tears have streaked year in, year out, from the day Odysseus sailed away to Troy with Atreus's two sons. But you never had the heart, before those insolent suitors crowd back to the house, to tell me clearly about your father's journey home, if you've heard any news." "Of course, mother," thoughtful Telemachus reassured her quickly, "I will tell you the whole true story now. We sailed to Pylos, to Nestor, the great king, and he received me there in his lofty palace, treated me well and warmly, yes, as a father treats a long-lost son just home from voyaging, years abroad. Such care he showered on me, he and his noble sons. But of strong, enduring Odysseus, dead or alive, he's heard no news, he said, from any man on earth. He sent me on to the famous spearman Atrides Menelaus, on with a team of horses drawing a bolted chariot, and there I saw her, Helen of Argos. All for her, Achaeans and Trojans suffered so much hardship, thanks to the gods' decree. The lord of the war crime Menelaus asked at once what pressing need had brought me to lovely Lacedaemon, and when I told him the whole story first to last, the king burst out, 'How shameful! That's the bed of a brave man of war they'd like to crawl inside, those spineless craven cowards. Weak as the doe that beds down her fawns in a mighty lion's den, her newborn sucklings, then trails off to the mountain spurs and grassy bends to graze her fill, but back the lion comes to his own lair, and the master deals both fawns a ghastly bloody death. Just what Odysseus will deal that mob, ghastly death. Ah, if only Father Zeus, Athena, and Lord Apollo, that man who years ago in the games at Lesbos rose to Philomelides' challenge, wrestled him, pinned him down with one tremendous throw, and the Argives roared with joy, if only that Odysseus sported with those suitors a blood wedding, a quick death would take the lot. But about the things you've asked me so intently, I'll skew and sidestep nothing, not deceive you ever. Of all he told me, the old man of the sea who never lies, I'll hide or hold back nothing, not a single word. He said he'd seen Odysseus on an island, ground down in misery, off in a goddess's house, the nymph Calypso, who holds him there by force. He has no way to voyage home to his own native land, no trim ships in reach, no crew to ply the oars, and set him scudding over the seas broad back. So Menelaus, the famous spearman, told me. My mission accomplished, back I came at once, and the gods sent me a stiff following wind that sped me home, to the native land I love." His reassurance stirred the queen to her depths, and the godlike seer, Theoclymenus, added firmly, "Noble lady, wife of Laertes' son Odysseus, Menelaus can have no perfect revelations. Mark my words, I will make you a prophecy quite precise, and I'll hold nothing back. I swear by Zeus, the first of all the gods, by this table of hospitality here, my host, by Odysseus's hearth where I have come for help, I swear Odysseus is on native soil here and now, poised or on the prowl, learning of these rank crimes. He's sowing seeds of ruin for all your suitors. so clear, so true, that bird sign I saw as I sat on the benched ship and sounded out the future to the prince. If only, my friend, reserved Penelope exclaimed, everything you say would come to pass. You'd soon know my affection, know my gifts. Any man you meet would call you blessed. And so the three confided in the halls, while all the suitors before Odysseus's palace amused themselves with discus and long-throwing spears, out on the levelled grounds, free and easy as always, full of swagger. When the dinner hour approached and the sheep came home from pastures near and far, driven in by familiar drovers, Medon called them all, their favourite herald, always present at their meals. "My young lords, now you've played your games to your heart's content, come back to the hall so we can fix your supper. Nothing's better than dining well on time." They came at his summons, rising from the games and now bustling into the well-constructed palace, flinging down their cloaks on a chair or bench. They butchered hulking sheep and fatted goats, full-grown hogs, and a young cow from the herd, preparing for their feast. At the same time, the king and his loyal swineherd geared to leave the country for the town. Eumaeus, foreman of men, set things in motion. "Friend, I know you're keen on going down to town today, just as my master bid, though I'd rather you stay here to guard the farm, but I prize the boy. I fear he'll blame me later, addressing down from your master's hard to bear, so off we go now. The shank of the day is past. You'll find it colder, with nightfall coming on." "I know, I see your point," the crafty man replied. "There's sense in this old head, so let's be off. And from now on, you lead me all the way. Just give me a stick to lean on. If you have one ready cut, you say the road is treacherous, full of slips and slides." With that, he flung his beggar's sack across his shoulders, torn and tattered, slung from a fraying rope. Eumaeus gave him a staff that met his needs. Then the two moved out, leaving behind them dogs and herdsmen to stay and guard the farm. And so the servant led his master toward the city, looking for all the world like an old and broken beggar hunched on a stick, his body wrapped in shameful rags. Down over the rugged road they went, till hard by town they reached the stone-rimmed fountain running clear where the city people came and drew their water. Ithacus built it once, with Neritus and Polycto. Round it a stand of poplar thrived on the dank soil, all in a nestling ring, and down from a rock ledge overhead the cold water splashed, and crowning the fountain rose an altar stone erected to the nymphs, where every traveller paused and left an offering. Here Dolius's son Melanthius crossed their path, herding his goats, with a pair of drovers' help, the pick of his flocks, to make the suitors' meal. As soon as he saw them there, he broke into a flood of brutal foul abuse that made Odysseus's blood boil. "Look," he sneered, "one scum nosing another scum along. Dirt finds dirt by the will of God, it never fails. Stinking pig boy, where do you take your filthy swine, this sickening beggar who licks the pots at feasts? Hanging round the doorposts, rubbing his back, scavenging after scraps. No hero's swords and cauldrons, not for him. Hand him over to me, I'll teach him to work a farm, muck out my stalls, pitch feed to the young goats. Whey to drink will put some muscle on his hams. Oh no, he's learned his lazy ways too well. He's got no itch to stick to good hard work. He'd rather go scrounging round the countryside begging for crusts to stuff his greedy gut. Let me tell you, sir, help me, it's the truth. If he sets foot in King Odysseus's royal palace, salvos of footstools flung at his head by all the lords will crack his ribs as he runs the line of fire through the house." Wild, reckless taunts, and just as he passed Odysseus, the idiot lurched out with a heel and kicked his hip. But he couldn't knock the beggar off the path, he stood his ground so staunchly. Odysseus was torn. Should he wheel with his staff and beat the scoundrel senseless, or hoist him by the midriff, spit his skull on the rocks? He steeled himself instead, his mind in full control. But Eumaeus glared at the goatherd, cursed him to his face, then lifted up his hands and prayed his heart out. Oh, nymphs of the fountain, daughters of Zeus, if Odysseus ever burned you, the long thighs of lambs or kids covered with rich fat, now bring my prayer to pass. Let that man come back. Some god guide him now. He'd toss to the winds the flashes show you, make Melanthius so cocksure, always strutting round the town while worthless field hands leave your flocks a shambles. Listen to him, the goatherd shouted back. All bark and no bite from the vicious mutt. One fine day I'll ship him out in a black lugger miles from Ithaca. Sell him off for a good stiff price. Just let Apollo shoot Telemachus down with his silver bow today in the halls, or the suitors snuff his life out. As sure as I know, the day the king's return is blotted out, the king is worlds away. With his parting shot, he left them trudging on and went and reached the royal house in no time. Slipping in, he took his seat among the suitors, facing Eurymachus, who favoured him the most. The carver set before him his plate of meat. A staid housekeeper brought the man his bread. And now at last the king and loyal swineherd, drawing near the palace, halted just outside, as the lyre's rippling music drifted round them. Phemius, striking up a song for assembled guests, and the master seized his servant's hand, exclaiming, Friend, what a noble house! Odysseus's house it must be, no mistaking it. You could tell it among a townful. Look! One building linked to the next, and the courtyard wall is finished off with a fine coping. The double doors are battle-proof, no man could break them down. I can tell a crowd is feasting there in force. Smell the savour of roasts, the ringing lyre. Listen, the lyre that God has made the friend of feasts. An easy guess, you said, you mere swineherd, for a man as keen as you at every turn. Put heads together, what do we do next? Either you're the first one into the palace, mix with the suitors, leave me where I am, or if you like, stay put and I'll go first myself. Linger long, someone might spot you here outside, knock you down or pelt you, mark my words, take care. The man who'd borne long years abroad replied, Well, I know. Remember, there's sense in this old head, you go in, you first, while I stay here behind. Stones and blows and I are hardly strangers. My heart is steeled by now, I've had my share of pain in the waves and wars. Add this to the total. Bring the trial on. But there's no way to hide the belly's hungers. What a curse, what mischief it brews in all our lives. Just for hunger, we rig and ride our long-benched ships on the barren salt sea, speeding death to enemies. Now as they talked on, a dog that lay there lifted up his muzzle, pricked his ears. It was Argos. Long-enduring Odysseus's dog. He trained as a puppy once, but little joy he got, since all too soon he shipped to sacred Troy. In the old days, young hunters loved to set him coursing after the wild goats and deer and hares, but now with his master gone, he lay there, cast away on piles of dung from mules and cattle, heaps collecting out before the gates, till Odysseus's serving men could cart it off to manure the king's estates. Infested with ticks, half dead from neglect, here lay the hound, old Argos. But the moment he sensed Odysseus standing by, he thumped his tail, nuzzling low, and his ears dropped, though he had no strength to drag himself an inch toward his master. Odysseus glanced to the side and flicked away a tear, hiding it from Eumaeus, diverting his friend in a hasty, offhand way. Strange, Eumaeus, look, a dog like this, lying here on a dunghill, what handsome lines. But I can't say for sure if he had the running speed to match his looks, or he was only the sort that gentry spoil at table, show dogs, masters pamper for their points. You told the stranger, Eumaeus, loyal swineherd, here, it's all too true, here's the dog of a man who died in foreign parts. But if he had now the form and flair he had in his glory days, as Odysseus left him, sailing off to Troy, you'd be amazed to see such speed, such strength. No quarry he chased in the deepest, darkest woods could ever slip this hound. A champion tracker, too. Ah, but he's run out of luck now, poor fellow. His master's dead and gone, so far from home, and the heartless women tend him not at all. Slaves, with their lords no longer there to crack the whip, lose all zest to perform their duties. Well, Zeus, the old thunderer, robs a man of half his virtue the day the yoke clamps down around his neck. With that he entered the well-constructed palace, strode through the halls and joined the proud suitors. But the dark shadow of death closed down on Argus's eyes the instant he saw Odysseus 20 years away. Now Prince Telemachus, first by far to note the swineherd coming down the hall, nodded briskly, called and waved him on. Eumaeus, glancing about, picked up a handy stool where the carver always sat, slicing meat for the suitors feasting through the house. He took and put it beside the prince's table facing him, straddled it himself, as a steward set a plate of meat before the man and served him bread from trays. Right behind him came Odysseus, into his own house, looking for all the world like an old and broken beggar, hunched on a stick, his body wrapped in shameful rags. Just in the doorway, just at the ashwood threshold, there he settled down. Leaning against the cypress post, a master joiner plain smooth and hung with a plumb line years ago. Telemachus motioned the swineherd over now, and choosing a whole loaf from a fine wicker tray, and as much meat as his outstretched hands could hold, he said, "Now take these to the stranger, tell him too, to make the rounds of the suitors, beg from one and all. Bashfulness for a man in need is no great friend." And Eumaeus did his bidding, went straight up to the guest and winged a greeting. "Here, stranger, Prince Telemachus sends you these, and tells you, too, to make the rounds of the suitors, beg from one and all. Bashfulness for a beggar, he says, is no great friend." "Powerful Zeus," the crafty king responded, "grant that your prince be blessed among mankind, and all his heart's desires come to pass." Taking the food in both hands, setting it down, spread out on his filthy sack before his feet, the beggar fell to his meal, as the singer raised a song throughout the house. Once he'd supped and the stirring bard had closed, the suitors broke into uproar down along the hall. And now Athena came to the side of Laertes' royal son and urged him, "Go now, gather crusts from all the suitors, test them so we can tell the innocent from the guilty." But not even so would Athena save one man from death. Still off he went, begging from each in turn, circling left to right, reaching out his hand like a beggar from the day that he was born. They pitied him, gave him scraps, were puzzled too, asking each other, "Who is this? Where is he from?" Till the goatherd Melanthea shouted out in their midst, "Listen to me, you lords who caught our noble queen. I'll tell you about the stranger. I've seen him before. I know for a fact the swineherd led him in, though I have no idea who the fellow is or where he thinks he comes from." At that, Antinous wheeled on Eumaeus, lashing out at him, "Your highness, swineherd, why drag this to town? Haven't we got our share of vagabonds to deal with, disgusting beggars who lick the feasters' plates? Isn't it quite enough, these swarming crowds consuming your master's bounty? Must you invite this rascal in the bargain?" "Antinous, high-born as you are," you told the man, Eumaeus, "that was a mean, low speech. Now who'd go out, who on his own hook, not I, and ask a stranger in from nowhere, unless he had some skills to serve the house? A prophet, a healer who cures disease, a worker in wood, or even a god-inspired bard whose singing warms the heart, they're the ones asked in around the world. A beggar? Who would invite a beggar to bleed his household white? You of all the suitors are always roughest on the servants of our king, on me most of all. Not that I care, no, so long as his queen, his wise queen, is still alive in the palace. Prince Telemachus, too." "Stop, Eumaeus," poised Telemachus broke in quickly now. "Don't waste so much breath on Antinous here. It's just his habit to bait a man with abuse, and spur the rest as well." He wheeled on the suitor, letting loose. "How kind you are to me, Antinous, kind as a father to his son, encouraging me to send this stranger packing from my house with a harsh command. I'd never do it, God forbid. Take and give to the beggar. I don't grudge it. I'd even urge you on. No scruples now, never fear your gifts will upset my mother or any servant in King Odysseus's royal house. But no such qualm could enter that head of yours, bent on feeding your own face, not feeding strangers. Antinous countered the young prince in kind. So high and mighty Telemachus, such unbridled rage. If all the suitors gave him the sort of gift I'll give, the house would be rid of him for 3 whole months. With that, from under his table he seized the stool that propped his smooth feet as he revelled on, just lifting it into view. But as for the rest, all gave to the beggar, filled his sack with handouts, bread and meat, and Odysseus seemed at the point of getting back to his doorsill, done with testing suitors, home free himself, when he stopped beside Antinous, begging face to face, "Give me a morsel, friend. You're hardly the worst Achaean here, it seems. The noblest one, in fact. You look like a king to me. So you should give a bigger crust than the rest, and I will sing your praises all across the earth. I too once lived in a lofty house that men admired, rolling in wealth I'd often give to a vagabond like myself, whoever he was, whatever need had brought him to my door. And crowds of servants I had, and lots of all it takes to live the life of ease, to make men call you rich. But Zeus ruined it all, God's will, no doubt, when he shipped me off with a roving band of pirates bound for Egypt, a long, hard sail, to wreck my life. There in the Nile Delta I moored our ships of war. God knows I ordered my trusty crews to stand by just where they were and guard the anchored fleet, and I sent a patrol to scout things out from higher ground. But swept away by their own reckless fury, the crew went berserk. They promptly began to plunder the lush Egyptian farms, dragged off the women and children, killed the men. Outcries reached the city in no time. Stirred by shouts, the entire town came streaming down at the break of day, filling the river plain with chariots, ranks of infantry, and the gleam of bronze. Zeus, who loves the lightning, flung down murderous panic on all my men-at-arms. No one dared to stand his ground and fight. Disaster ringed us round from every quarter. Droves of my men they hacked down with swords, led off the rest alive to labor for them as slaves. Myself, they passed me on to a stranger come their way to ship it to Cyprus. Iasus's son, Demeter it was, who ruled Cyprus then with an iron fist, and from there I sailed to Ithaca just as you see me now, ground down by pain and sorrow. Good God Almighty, Antinous cut the beggar short, what spirit brought this pest to plague our feast? Back off, into the open, clear of my table, or you'll soon land in an Egypt, Cyprus to break your heart. What a brazen, shameless beggar! Scrounging food from each man in turn, and look at their handouts, reckless, never a qualm, no holding back, not when making free with the next man's goods, each one's got plenty here. Pity, pity, the wry Odysseus countered, drawing away. No sense in your head to match your handsome looks. You'd grudge your servant a pinch of salt from your own larder, you who lounge at the next man's board, but lack the heart to tear a crust of bread and hand it on to me, though there's God's plenty here. Boiling over, Antinous gave him a scathing look and let fly. Now you won't get out of the hall unscarred, I swear, not after such a filthy string of insults. With that he seized the stool and hurled it. Square in the back it struck Odysseus, just under the right shoulder, but he stood up against it, steady as a rock, and staggered by Antinous's blow, just shook his head, silent, his mind churning with thoughts of bloody work. Back he went to the doorsill, crouched, and setting down his sack about to burst, he faced the suitors, saying, "Hear me out, you lords who court the noble queen. I must say what the heart inside me urges. There's nothing to groan about, no hurt, when a man takes a blow as he fights to save his own possessions, cattle or shining flocks. But Antinous struck me all because of my good-for-nothing belly. That curse that makes such pain for us poor men. But if beggars have their gods and furies too, let Antinous meet his death before he meets his bride." "Enough, stranger," Antinous volleyed back. Sit there and eat in peace, or go get lost, or else, for the way you talk, these young men will hale you up and down the hall by your hands or feet until you're skinned alive. Naked threats. But the rest were outraged, even those brash suitors. One would say to another, "Look, Antinous, that was a crime, to strike the luckless beggar. Your fate is sealed if he's some god from the blue, and the gods do take on the look of strangers dropping in from abroad, disguised in every way as they roam and haunt our cities, watching over us. All our foul play, all our fair play, too." So they warned, but Antinous paid no heed, and the anguish welled up in Telemachus's breast for the blow his father took. Yet he let no tears go rolling down his face, just shook his head, silent, his mind churning with thoughts of bloody work. But then, when cautious Queen Penelope heard how Antinous struck the stranger there in the halls, she cried out with her serving women round her, "May Apollo the archer strike you just as hard!" And her housekeeper Eurynome added quickly, "If only our prayers were granted, then not one of the lot would live to see dawn climb her throne tomorrow." "Dear old woman," alert Penelope replied, "they're all hateful, plotting their vicious plots. But Antinous is the worst of all, he's Black Death itself. Here's this luckless stranger wandering down the halls and begging scraps, hard-pressed by need. And the rest all give the man his fill of food. But that one gives him a footstool hurled at his right shoulder, hits his back." While she exclaimed among her household women sitting there in her room, Odysseus bent to supper. Penelope called the swineherd in and gave instructions. "Go, good Eumaeus, tell the stranger to come at once. I'd like to give him a warm welcome. Ask the man if he's heard some news about my gallant husband or seen him in the flesh. He seems like one who's roved around the world." "My queen," you answered, Eumaeus, loyal swineherd, "if only the lords would hold their peace a moment. Such stories he tells, he'd charm you to your depths. 3 nights, 3 days I kept him in my shelter. I was the first the fellow stumbled onto, fleeing from some ship, but not even so could he bring his tale of troubles to an end. You know how you can stare at a bard in wonder, trained by the gods to sing and hold men spellbound, how you can long to sit there listening all your life when the man begins to sing? So he charmed my heart, I tell you, huddling there beside me at my fire. He and Odysseus's father go way back, he says, sworn friends, and the stranger hails from Crete, where the stock of old King Minos still lives on, and from Crete he made his way, racked by hardship, tumbling on like a rolling stone until he turned up here. He swears he's heard of Odysseus, just in reach, in rich Thesprotian country, still alive, laden with treasure, heading home at last." "Go," the cautious queen responded, "call him here, so he can tell me his own tale face to face." "Our friends can sit at the gates or down the halls and play their games, debauched to their heart's content. Why not? Their own stores, their bread and seasoned wine, lie intact at home, food for their serving men alone. But they infest our palace day and night. They butcher our cattle, our sheep, our fat goats, feasting themselves sick, swilling our glowing wine as if there's no tomorrow, all of it squandered. No, there is no man like Odysseus in command to drive this curse from the house. Dear God, if only Odysseus came back home to native soil now, he and his son would avenge the outrage of these men like that." At her last words, Telemachus shook with a lusty sneeze, and the sudden outburst echoed up and down the halls. The queen was seized with laughter, calling out to Eumaeus' winged words, "Go quickly, bring me this stranger now, face to face. You hear how my son sealed all I said with a sneeze? So let death come down with grim finality on these suitors, one and all. Not a single man escape his sudden doom. And another thing, mark my words, I tell you, if I'm convinced that all he says is true, I'll dress him in shirt and cloak, in handsome clothes." Off the swineherd went, following her instructions, made his way to the stranger's side and winged a word. "Old friend, our queen, wise Penelope, summons you, the prince's mother. The spirit moves her now, heartsick as she is, to ask a question or two about her husband. and if she's convinced that all you say is true, she'll dress you in shirt and cloak. That's what you need. The most of all now, bread, you can always beg around the country, fill your belly well. They'll give you food, whoever has a mind to.
Gladly, Eumaeus, the patient man replied. I'll tell her the whole truth and nothing but Icarius's daughter, your wise queen Penelope. I know all about that man. It's been my lot to suffer what he's suffered. But I fear the mob's abuse, these rough young bucks, their pride and violence hit the iron skies. Just now that scoundrel, as I went down the halls, harming no one, up and dealt me a jolting blow. And who would raise a hand to save me? Telemachus? Anyone else? No one. So tell Penelope now, anxious as she may be, to wait in the halls until the sun goes down. Then she can ask me all she likes about her husband's journey home. But let her give me a seat close by the fire. The clothes on my back are tatters. Well, you know, you were the first I begged for care and shelter.
Back the swineherd went, following his instructions. Penelope, just as she crossed her threshold, broke out, "Didn't you bring him? What's in the vagrant's mind? Fear of someone? Embarrassed by something else? Here in the house is the fellow bashful. A bashful man will make a sorry beggar." "You answered your queen, Eumaeus, loyal swineherd. He talks to the point. He thinks as the next man would, who wants to dodge their blows, that brutal crew. He tells you to wait here till the sun goes down. It's better for you, my queen. Then you can talk with the man in private, hear the stranger's news."
"Nobody's fooled that stranger," wise Penelope said. "He sees how things could go. Surely no man on earth can match that gang for reckless, deadly schemes."
So she agreed. And now, mission accomplished, back the loyal swineherd went to mix with the suitors. Moving next to the prince, he whispered a parting word, their heads close together so no one else could hear. "Dear boy, I must be off to see to the pigs and the whole farm. You're living, mine as well. You're the one to tend to all things here. Look out for your own skin first. Do take care, you mustn't come to grief. Crowds of your own countrymen plot to your death. Let Zeus wipe out the lot before they kill us all." "Right you are, old friend," the canny prince replied. "Now off you go, once you've had your supper, but come back bright and early. Bring some good sound boars for slaughter. Yes, I'll tend to all things here. I and the deathless gods." And the swineherd sat down again on his polished stool, and once he'd supped and drunk to his heart's content, back he went to his pigs, leaving the royal precincts still filled with feasters, all indulging now in the joys of dance and song. The day was over. Dusk was falling fast.